spotter corps thugs will drag someone into the street and begin beating them, and they are then surrounded by crowds of Shia passersby who cheer them on.
We were very modern, we were very Western culturalized Iraq. Why it's been shifted to this Islamic dark ages?
I didn't know what was up, what was going down.
Just free your mind.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Activists in four countries challenge bloody discrimination, anti-queer killings are buried in Iraq's sectarian chaos, and audiophile debuts two soloists and a man band. All that and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm Sherry Lund.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending March 25, 2006. Bans on gay men donating blood are being debated on three continents. Queer activists and supportive medical professionals have for quite some time been urging reconsideration of such across-the-board bans as more sophisticated blood testing methods have been developed. The South African National Blood Services prohibits donations by men who've had sex with men during the previous 5 years. But a recent meeting of what's being called the Joint Working Group, composed of registered nonprofit groups serving LGBT people in South Africa and representatives from the country's blood services, determined that donor policy needs to be based on high-risk behavior and not so-called high-risk groups. The panel further concluded that failure to use condoms during anal sex by both heterosexual and homosexual men should be a more pressing concern. A committee of scientific and legal experts, to be selected by all members of the Joint Working Group, is scheduled to continue that dialogue in the coming weeks.
Because of a jump in trauma cases in major hospitals in the Australian state of Tasmania, the Red Cross Blood Service this week issued an urgent plea for people to donate blood to help it meet increasing demand. The Tasmanian Gay and Lesbian Rights Group used the news to urge the Red Cross to review its ban on accepting donations from men who've had male-to-male sex in the past year. Group spokesperson Rodney Kroom said the Red Cross should screen potential donors based on their sexual practices, not on their sexual orientation.
After more than a decade of banning all blood donations by gay men, the American Red Cross this week announced their support for a policy change that would allow such donations, but only from men who've gone at least a year without having had sex with other men. A spokesperson for the Red Cross called the current blanket ban unfair and discriminatory in a statement on the American Association of Blood Banks website, saying it does not appear rational to treat gay sex differently from straight sex. According to a report by the Associated Press, the Red Cross policy change has prompted the U.S. Food and Drug Administration to consider a new risk assessment that would take 3 to 6 months to complete. The current 16-year-old ban prohibits any man who has had sex with another man since 1977 from ever donating blood.
But two prominent groups have come out against any policy change in Canada. Canadian Blood Services, which oversees the nation's blood supply, supports the current ban preventing blood donations by any man who has had sex with another man since 1976, according to a report this week in the Vancouver newspaper, The Province. And David Page, a spokesperson for the Canadian Hemophilia Society, said that the one-year celibacy requirement being discussed in the U.S. is not enough. The information we have now, he said, is that such a change would increase the health risk, not of HIV, but of either unknown or emerging viruses. Canadian Blood Services says it is, however, already conducting a risk assessment on the consequences of a policy change.
India, one of the world's most populous nations and certainly a country of many contradictions, has officially registered its first gay organization, despite the fact that homosexual acts are still illegal there under Penal Code Section 377, a lingering British colonial-era law. The Men's Community Development Society has been meeting unofficially in Chennai for 6 years and has over 700 members. News about the group's official registration brought supportive comments in the media this week from several national celebrities. India's courts continue to review Section 377, which makes consensual gay sex punishable by up to 10 years in prison.
South Korea's Ministry of Defense has responded to criticism earlier this year from the country's National Human Rights Commission over its treatment of gay conscripts. All men are required to serve at least 2 years in the country's armed forces. The military will treat homosexual soldiers the same as heterosexual ones, the ministry said in a written statement distributed this week to news agencies. The announcement also comes after a series of unfair dismissal and bullying incidents in the armed forces were reported in the national press. Though the ministry statement suggests more grudging tolerance than welcoming acceptance, it's been applauded by South Korea's queer community as a significant step in the right direction.
Surveys about attitudes towards lesbians, gay men, and queer families poured out of the U.S. this week. A new poll by the Pew Research Center for the People and the Press suggests that the tide of American opposition to marriage equality for same-gender couples may be receding, at least a little. A bare majority of 51% now oppose same-gender marriage, while a similar survey in February 2004 found 63% against, at a time when voters in several states were being pushed to the polls to approve constitutional marriage bans. The number of people who say they strongly oppose same-gender marriage has dropped to 28% from what was 42% in February 2004. Notably, strong opposition has dropped sharply among senior citizens and Republicans who describe themselves as religious moderates. Those supporting marriage equality rose from 30% in early 2004 to 39% now. Evan Wolfson of the equality group Freedom to Marry said that if you give people the information and time they need to understand the harm discrimination in marriage causes real American families, the majority will continue to move toward fairness.
According to a study released this week by the University of Vermont, same-gender family households don't differ all that much from those of the general U.S. population. Professor Glenn Elder presented his new research analyzing the lives of same-gender couples at a recent meeting of the Association of American Geographers. Using sophisticated geographic-based analysis, he and his colleagues were able to compare data on a typical group from U.S. Census tracts with those of same-gender couples who traveled to Vermont from virtually all other U.S. states to enter into civil unions. Of the mostly insignificant differences between queer and heterosexual households, Elder said, "It's surprising on the one hand, but also reassuring. Gays and lesbians who aspire towards the symbolic and real material benefits of marriage are no different from other people who aspire towards domestic stability and material comfort," he said. "These are not people who are ripping the fabric of America."
Children adopted by gays and lesbians grow up no better or worse than those raised by heterosexuals, according to a report released this week by the Evan B. Donaldson Adoption Institute. Based on both the available research and growing experience, the report concludes, adoption by gays and lesbians holds promise as an avenue for achieving permanency for many of the waiting children in foster care. The Institute is a long-established independent organization with no ties to political interest groups or causes, and has for several years been a source of information for journalists, researchers, and policymakers on adoption issues. The report, entitled Expanding Resources for Children, determined that on a range of measurements of social and psychological adjustment, children raised by gay and lesbian parents fare comparably to those raised in so-called traditional families. There is simply no credible research showing that children are harmed when they're adopted by gay and lesbian parents, said Institute Executive Director Adam Pertman, but lots of evidence to indicate they do well in those homes. The report also noted that tens of thousands of children in the foster care system are disadvantaged by laws that bar gays and lesbians from adopting them and urged that those barriers be lifted.
And a California field poll, also published this week, reveals a growing acceptance of gays and lesbians and underscores the "come out" mantra chanted by queer activists since the days of Stonewall. The last comprehensive California poll surveying attitudes towards gays and lesbians in 1997 found that 45% of the respondents believed sexual relationships between adults of the same gender were always wrong. The new poll shows that number has dropped to 32%. Some 67% of Californians now support queer military service, 59% favor bans on workplace discrimination, and 55% say gay and lesbian couples should be allowed to adopt children. Throughout the poll, those most opposed to legal protections for gays and lesbians were also least likely to personally know any. "To me, that's one of the most revealing numbers in the survey," said field pollster Mark DiCamillo, "because it says familiarity with gays and lesbians in your own life has a powerful influence." However, the poll numbers on the issue of marriage equality stayed about the same. a slight majority of Californians remain opposed to same-gender marriage.
And finally, Jamie Raskin, a professor of law at American University, was asked to testify earlier this month at a legislative hearing on a proposed constitutional amendment to ban same-gender marriage in the state of Maryland. At the end of his queer-supportive testimony, Republican Senator Nancy Jacobs said, "Mr. Raskin, my Bible says marriage is only between a man and a woman. What do you have to say about that?" Raskin replied, "Senator, when you took your oath of office, you placed your hand on the Bible and swore to uphold the Constitution. You did not place your hand on the Constitution and swear to uphold the Bible."
That's News Wrap for the week ending March 25th, 2006. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written this week by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm Sherry Ludd.
Anything is possible when you free your mind and start screaming party anthems. And we'll prove it later in the program. As Iraq's sectarian crisis is measured each day by the number of bodies left by death squads overnight, the specific targeting of lesbians and gay men is being ignored by both the occupying forces and the mainstream media. For a rare first-hand look at the desperate situation facing Iraqi queers, we turn to the March 23rd installment of Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez.
As violence continues on a daily basis in Iraq, President Bush is continuing his media offensive this week. A town hall-style meeting in West Virginia Wednesday was his latest in five straight days of appearances. The president has repeatedly lauded what he called democracy in Iraq and the freedoms from living under Saddam Hussein's oppressive regime. But yet another story out of the country paints a very different picture. Shia death squads in Iraq have been systematically targeting gay Iraqis for persecution and execution. The attacks follow a death to gays fatwa issued by Grand Ayatollah Ali al-Sistani last October. In a question and answer section of his website, Sistani says homosexuality is, quote, forbidden, and calls for the killing of gays in the, quote, worst, most severe way.
The story comes in this week's issue of Gay City News. It reports that the Badr Corps have heeded Sistani's call and have been targeting gay Iraqis. The Badr Corps is the military arm of the Iranian-backed Supreme Council of the Islamic Revolution in Iraq, a powerful Shia group that's the largest political formation in Iraq's Shia community. For more on the story, we are joined by Ali Hilli, a gay Muslim Iraqi living in exile in Britain. He fled Iraq 2 years ago. 5 months ago, he founded the Abu Nawas Group to support persecuted gay Iraqis. He joins us on the line from London. We're also joined on the telephone here in New York by Doug Ireland, who broke the story in the Gay City News, a columnist for The Nation magazine, Village Voice, and New York Observer for years, also contributing editor of PAS, the monthly for HIV-positive community. Ali Hilli, let's begin with you in London. What was your experience in Iraq, and why have you gone into exile?
Iraq, at the time of Saddam, I'm talking about as a gay Iraqi, it was not as bad as we can see now. In fact, people are really accepting gays, especially in theaters, in entertainment, in media. We have several actors, singers, very popular before. There was no homophobic attitude towards gay and lesbians. Most of them are welcomed in the community, in the society, with the rest of the Iraq.
And what has happened in the period since the U.S. occupation?
Well, we started to receive information, in particular the last 2 years, when we made contact with my old friends in Baghdad, and horrific details about killing, intimidation, harassing, arresting. We were very modern, we were very Western culturalized Iraq comparing to the rest of the Middle East. Why it's been shifted to this Islamic Dark Ages country?
Can you tell us about the fatwa issued by Grand Ayatollah Ali al-Sistani, the section on his website that talks about homosexuality is forbidden and calls for the killing of gays in the worst, most severe way?
Sistani is the highest spiritual leader for Shia in the Middle East. And on his website, we found an order for killing for gay and lesbians. In fact, I'm looking at it right now, till this moment. Our sources inside Iraq told us that they used this print and send it to people from this website.
We're also joined by journalist Doug Ireland, who broke the story in the Gay City News. Doug, welcome to Democracy Now!
Good morning, Juan.
Now, this is a human rights issue that has gotten no attention, absolutely no attention here in the United States.
The organized and systematic kidnapping and assassination of gay people in Iraq has gotten absolutely zero coverage in United States media. The killings are ongoing. They are almost a daily occurrence. I spoke this past weekend with an underground gay activist in Baghdad who told me that just in the previous week, four gay Iraqis had been found murdered in the usual style employed by the Badr Corps, which is to say the bodies are discovered with their hands bound behind their backs and bullets in the back of the head. The Badr Corps, which is the military arm of the Supreme Council for the Islamic Revolution in Iraq, is compiling lists of homosexuals. Many gay Iraqis are warned that if they do not get married, they will be subject to assassination. They usually give them about a month to change their ways, as they put it. And if they don't, they are targeted for murder. And since the Ayatollah Sistani's death fatwa against gays, this has given a green light for manifestations of public homophobia in the most violent way by Shia Muslims in Iraq. So you have situations where Badr Corps thugs will drag someone into the street and begin beating them, and they are then surrounded by crowds of Shia passers-by who cheer them on. It's a very desperate situation. The gay activist I spoke to in Baghdad, with practically tears in his voice, was begging the West to please, we need protection. When gay activists have gone to the U.S. authorities in the green zone, I was told they treat the gay Iraqis who are begging them for protection with contempt and derision, which is rather scandalous.
Ali Hilli, you left Iraq 2 years ago, living in exile now, afraid to even show your face. Were you a supporter of Saddam Hussein?
No. Actually, I have big hate for this person. He is the worst thing that ever happened to Iraq, maybe, until we saw this religious mullahs who brought to the government. Iran has a great, huge, huge influence now on Iraqi government, and they want to adapt the Islamic Iran version inside Iraq and in the south. The last report we got today from Mr. Mohammed al-Shahwani of the Al-Ghad newspaper, it says names and addresses belonging to Badr organization closely affiliated to the Iranian regime were discovered during a raid by the Iraqi intelligence agency against a police center last month. An Iranian were arrested during the raid in Iraq. One is an officer intelligence from Iranian regime. This proved that Iraq has been penetrated by the Iranian regime through the mullahs and religious parties.
Ali Hilli, we want to thank you very much for being with us and for speaking out where you are now in Britain, having gone into exile from Iraq, and Doug Ireland of Gay City News for breaking this story.
Our sincerest thanks to Amy Goodman, Juan Gonzalez, and Democracy Now! For permission to air an edited version of their segment, Iraqi Exile Speaks Out Against the Targeting of Gay Iraqis by Shia Death Squads. It can be heard in its entirety at democracynow.org.
Hello, this is Angela Robinson, writer-director of the film Debs and director of the film Herbie, Fully Loaded, and you're listening to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine.
The inspiration for the artists featured in this month's visit to the Audiophile comes from the big city, personal experience, and disco.
I'm tired of all this craziness. I can hardly believe it, hardly believe it. I know I'm not your therapist, but you gotta believe me, you gotta believe me. The smooth feeling fills you up, spreading through your veins.
An artist who just goes by the name Darren starts this segment with his debut album called Anything Is Possible. Hi, I'm J.D. Doyle.
I'm Chris Wilson, and you're listening to Audiophile. Darren moved from the UK to New York City 6 years ago and fell in love with the city, finding much of his inspiration from the people he met.
The album was about my combination of my British-influenced pop music and the influence of music that I found in New York City, and also a combination of my experiences in New York City, whether that be traumatic or enlightening. And this all came together on the album Anything Is Possible.
You've frozen my heart with your cruel words. You turned me in and out, made me start to doubt. Messed with my mind until I didn't know what was up, what was going down.
Only love could push you to the limit, make you cross that fine line between pleasure and pain. Only love can push you to the limit, set your heart on fire, then burn you with love's brutal flame.
Find out more about Darren and his album Anything Is Possible at www.darrenmusic.com. That's www.darrenmusic.com.
Matt Clark is from Indiana, and his first album is called Free Your Mind.
Much too hard to be sure that your thoughts are what you believe. I know it's hard sometimes to be living. Too many people are so insecure. Mistakes are easy to make, but now is the time for us to be giving. Just free your mind and the walls come down.
Clark's album takes acoustic pop and adds lyrics that are both passionate and thought-provoking.
Basically, I had gotten to a point in my life where I had this collection of songs regarding personal experience, social commentary, and it was just time to put it down, and I wanted to share it with other people. We slammed it together in 3 weeks, and it turned out fantastically. I'm very proud of it.
In your life, you might meet someone more inclined than me. What you think a lover ought to be. But no one can predict the kind of relationship, and I know you won't regret someone like me. You may not believe in anything you're told, but we should travel down this road.
You can learn more about Matt Clark's album, Free Your Mind, at www.cdbaby.com.
Okay, you may think you've heard this next song before, but not like this. From England is a quartet who call themselves, Are You Ready? Four Poofs and a Piano. And their debut album is called Screamin' Party Anthems.
Hi, hello.
We're your weather girls.
And we got news for you.
You better listen. Get ready, all you lonely girls. And leave those brollies behind.
Humidity is rising. Barometer's getting low.
the place to go.
The album includes 13 medleys with about 85 songs, and we can't do justice here to how much fun this CD is. The guys are Ian, Dave, Stephen, and David, and Ian tells us about it.
Well, this is our debut album, and the last thing we expected to be doing was a whole load of pop songs. I mean, we're far too old to be in a boy band, dear. But we were asked to do it, and we had a brilliant time recording it. It's a whole range of medleys. There's a bit of ABBA in there, there's Kylie, we've got Madonna, Village People, the Pet Shop Boys. You know, all quite butch, nothing camp about it at all, dear. But we touch on about 85 songs altogether. It makes us feel great when we listen to it, and we just hope people enjoy it.
Spells their name starting with the number 4, so you can find out more about Screamin' Party Anthems at www.fourpoofsandapiano.com.
That's it for this edition of Audiophile. You can write to us at Post Office Box 66648, Houston, Texas 77006, or by visiting our website at www.audiophile.org. That's www.audiofile.org.
Audiophile is produced by J.D. Doyle, Chris Wilson, and Christopher David Trentum. I'm J.D. Doyle.
And I'm Chris Wilson. Keep listening.
Tear us apart. Baby, I would rather be dead. You're simply the best.
For a melodious half-hour collection of our audiophile producers' picks for the best queer-created music of 2005, log on to thiswayout.org. Find out how you can own the Audiophile 2005 Year in Review. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. This week, Sherry Lund, Rick Watts, Rex Walkner, Graham Underhill, and Chris Wilson, J.D. Doyle, and Christopher David Trentum contributed program material, with a very special thanks to Amy Goodman, Juan Gonzalez, and the producers of Democracy Now! Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen online to This Way Out exclusively on planetout.com. There's also a link at our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by direct charitable donations from our listeners. We thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to find out how you can help keep this program on the air and choose from some unique This Way Out queer history, music, and culture CDs that you can own as our thanks. That's thiswayout.org. To sign up for our weekly emailed program information messages and or our monthly This Way Out updates, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening on 2UUU, Nowra, New South Wales, WOMR, Provincetown, Massachusetts, KOOP, Austin, Texas, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Everybody stay tuned.